Hey, you know, I think I'm pretty sure Reese just said swastika like I do, Greg.
Yeah, he's from fucking Wales, man.
What does that matter?
How'd you pronounce swastika?
Swastika.
It's not swastika, like a shawarma.
Yeah, it's not a shawarma.
is my Welsh accent.
It's like a swashbuckling adventure. Jesus.
That's exactly what the Third Reich was.
Yeah, a swashbuckling adventure.
Maybe we just misunderstood what their whole agenda was.
History That Beats Itself is a comedy podcast. Kevin, John, and Greg are not experts, historians, or even all that smart.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to History Defeats Itself, part of the Sonar Network of podcasts. My name is Kevin Rosenquist. Thank you for spending your time with us. History Defeats Itself is a comedy podcast that wonders if we, as people, learn from the past or if we simply repeat and defeat ourselves. I am joined, of course, by my co-hosts out there in Los Angeles, California, John Banks, Greg Mitchell. How are you two?
Wonderful.
Fantastic.
And for the first time, we have guests. In our 2 years, we've never had guests before, but we have two friends of the podcast with us from the hilarious podcast Canadian Politics is Boring, Reese Waters and Jesse Harley. Welcome, gentlemen. Woo!
Hold on a second. We're
hey, guys. I can't believe we were your first guests. Yeah.
What? We're your first guests?
No, that's not true. Because remember, Jack was on the show for like 60... My son?
That's true.
For like 60 seconds.
Wasn't he just trying to fix your audio?
Yeah, that was part of it.
So technically, we are the first guests.
You guys are the first guests. Yeah, first
technically. Good use of technically.
Outside of admin and admin support and things like that.
So I have two apologies to make. Who's editing this? Who's going to be editing this podcast?
That's me.
Kevin. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So first apology is to Kevin for having to edit this podcast. The second is to our listener who will have to listen to five grown men speaking in their ear for an hour.
Yeah.
So enjoy.
It's a lot.
Enjoy that treat. That's...
Yep. Did you say listener?
Oh yeah, no. The...
I think you meant the royal listener.
You know who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about your guys' show?
Wow. So Canadian Politics is Boring is basically me, a Canadian immigrant. I moved to Canada 3 years ago, teaching an apathetic Canadian Jesse.
That's me.
About the crazy, shocking stuff that gets glossed over in Canadian politics. So,
and he's actually, so it started that way because I genuinely don't care about politics. And so he started sharing the most insane stories he could find. And now that we're locked in, we've been doing this for over a year now. We've got a really nice, healthy audience. Now he's just giving me regular old politics stories that, like, he's he thinks they're fascinating because he really likes Canadian politics and learning about politics. And I have to remind him, like, dude, this is boring for me. I don't want to. Yeah, but it's fascinating. No, man.
We just recorded an episode on Canada and Vietnam and how they tested Agent Orange on students in New Brunswick. That's not boring.
It sounds great. A great topic for a comedy podcast. We'd often do great topics for comedy podcasts too, like gun control. That was hilarious.
Right.
I listened to that episode. It was really interesting.
Well, thank you.
Notice he didn't say funny.
It is hard to make jokes about, definitely.
Yes. That is something that Reese does enjoy doing on our comedy podcast as well, is sneaking in incredibly depressing topics and gory and depressing on our comedy.
And then just watch Jesse navigate how to be funny around them. It's very entertaining.
We like to throw in systemic racism every once in a while. That's always a nice thing to get. The
well, how can you not?
Yeah,
you
know, that's true. In our country,
everywhere.
How can you not?
Well, that's very different than perpetuating systemic racism.
That's true. We just point it out. We're just like, it's in this.
Jesse, I have to bring something up that you guys talked about in a recent episode that blew me away. I get it. Okay, you're not a politics guy. You're also not a sports guy. I know that.
True.
How did you really not know what Property Brothers was?
No, I don't watch.
How the fuck did you not know that, though? I mean, that's like, I think
it formed a cult.
Well, I think in our country, in the United States, we just assume they're royalty. You know, like it goes Trudeau, the Property Brothers, and then like the cast of Schitt's Creek. You know, and then that's it.
And Ryan Reynolds. He's there too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I forgot about Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. Right, of course.
Well, and Ryan, you got a lot of Ryans. Ryan Gosling. Ryan Reynolds.
That's right. Ryan Gosling. Yeah. Ryan Gosling's abs are from Canada.
If there's a common thread that I could weave through this, it's that all Canadians are incredibly handsome.
Yeah. That's what it's got to be.
That's it.
Or at least the ones named Ryan.
And this is Ryan Mitchell coming at you. Gregory Ryan Mitchell.
Gregory Ryan Mitchell.
Reese, whenever you get your full citizenship, that's the day you technically become a handsome Canadian.
Is the surgery part of the deal?
Yeah.
Greg just became an actual citizen of the United States, so he actually became a lot less handsome.
He did.
That happens. That makes a lot of sense.
And he was not working with a lot to begin with, so it's really gone downhill for him in the last 6 months.
Congratulations, Greg.
You're very welcome. And I did it to vote for Biden. So I know. So Jesse, you don't know politics. So
I have heard of Joe Biden.
Yeah, we had a president called Donald Trump.
Yeah, you may have heard of him. Maybe not.
He was a bad guy.
It didn't go well.
You know what's so weird? Honest to God, it's so weird not hearing about Donald Trump every single day.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome?
You know, it's refreshing as hell, but it's weird after like so many years of it. You know, what happened today? Oh, Donald! Did you hear Donald Trump set fire to a kitten and then ate it? Oh, it doesn't surprise me.
And his loyal followers are just loving this.
Yeah.
Well, what's crazy is like what he was able to undo and almost destroy in just 4 years.
It's incredible.
It's not over yet, though. This was just the precursor. This was the start. That's the dangerous part. Yeah, I mean, I one of the reasons I came to Canada was Brexit was one of the main reasons for me. We had lots of different reasons, but like it's amazing how politics can like force people to just suddenly go, yeah, I'm going to do this. And the same, like the UK just lost £1 billion worth of trade to the EU over the last year by leaving. So I'm like, I'm glad I left. I'm glad I'm in Canada now. And then Biden won, so it felt like it was nice to come to a continent where people were starting to make sensible decisions again.
Well,
give us time. We'll disappoint you again.
There's a lot of fucked up shit still happening, even though Trump's gone.
I said they were starting. I didn't say
that's good. Consistent. Yep. All right. So on each episode of History Defeats Itself, one of us picks the topic and does the research, and the other two, or in this case, other four, have no idea what the topic is going to be until it's revealed. And John is the lead today. So John, if you're ready, man, lay it on us. Tell us what we're going to talk about.
Okay, right. So we're going to do a light topic. We're going to get into abortion. So let's
yes.
No.
Good.
No, okay. No.
My favorite.
Are you going to perform an abortion? Like,
I am.
I was wondering what that surgical table was back there.
Yeah, it's weird.
So I got my mirror all set up and ready to go. All right, so we're going to do the history of the present and where is it all going of pharmaceuticals.
Drugs. We're talking about drugs.
Why did you say pharmaceuticals like there was another word coming after pharmaceuticals?
No, just pharmaceuticals.
Oh, we never did our shot.
Oh, man.
Are you guys drinking? Oh, shit.
We're falling apart. We're falling apart here.
I got lemonade.
I didn't know this was a drinking podcast.
Well, wait, Jesse, you got to grab a drink. Grab a little drink.
All right.
We can wait.
One second.
All right. Well, I'm going
to... I find it bizarre as someone who comes from a country where prescription drugs are free as part of the whole system. Whenever I've been to America, how many drug adverts there are on TV?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's a business.
I guess I didn't think about that. Is that you wouldn't have? Yeah. If you had free drugs, then you wouldn't have commercials for them.
No. You they give you what you need, and you take it home, and you go thank you, and you take it. There's no like sales process. It's all like just white labels.
All right, I have returned.
How do you know what's wrong with you if you don't see advertisements?
Well, but also it says, do you feel tired sometimes? Do you sometimes find maths hard? Maybe you've got sleepy math hard itis, and we made up a drug for you. It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yep. It is like that.
In North America, we don't pluralize the word math.
Yeah, so. I know. It's Reese. We'll get that into.
I feel like you're rubbing that in our noses a little bit.
There's only one math. Reese.
Free prescription drugs and no pluralizing math.
It's what the National Health Service, right? NHS, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
That's what you guys, yeah.
All right, man. Did we take our shot yet? Because...
Oh, yeah, here we do.
Oh, I do.
Okay. Was I not supposed to?
I don't know.
Drink, but let's do
I got
it
more.
I got, yeah.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Skål.
Cheers.
All right, let's do this shit.
All right, gentlemen. The oldest records of medicinal preparations made from plants, animals, or minerals are those of the early Chinese, Hindu, and Mediterranean civilizations. And herbal,
sounds about right.
Yeah, it does, right? It really, I mean, they've been around for a long time. They have a Compa Diem said to have been written in the 28th century BC for the legendary or by the legendary Emperor Xin Yong, which, I mean, of course, if you guys don't know who that is, you're fucking idiots. So.
He's actually my favorite emperor.
Is he really? Right. Number one?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's, like, he's top five for me, but
I have a full tattoo of his face on my back.
But he was fair.
Hold on. I'm getting a phone call from Marie now.
He described the anti-fever capabilities of a substance known as shongshan, which has since been shown to contain anti-malarial alkaloids.
Can you spell that for us, the entire sentence?
So it's W-H-I-C-H.
Oh, this is the tree bark, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I learned about that. No joke. At first I thought it was like a weird joke, and then I found out about it later. I was like, oh no, this is actually true. You can treat. I don't know if you can cure, but you can treat malaria by chewing a very specific tree bark. And I learned it from a fucking zombie video game.
Yeah.
But you know what? That was probably their goal when they made the game. Was we're going to teach people about this bark.
Yeah, that's it. You
know, to the purpose of the game.
Yeah. I think that was the same video that I watched where I learned how to masturbate.
Well, you know.
Jesus Christ.
I didn't really learn. It was kind of just kind of figured it out. I don't know. Like, I didn't watch any videos. It was kind of like, oh, hand dick. That's how
you
that goes.
You figured out how to masturbate by watching a zombie video game? Is that where I'm
talking about tree bark, by the way. sounds painful.
I can't help what my penis does.
Okay. Well, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen right there.
I have a feeling their show is going to sue our show. How dare you make me endure this?
We're going to have to pay, and we just have to edit each other's shows because we don't have any money in this show. So like, we'll just edit for you. And by we, I mean Kevin. Kevin will do all the editing.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you volunteering my services.
Workers at the School of Alchemy that flourished in Alexandria, Egypt in the 2nd century BC prepared several relative purified inorganic chemicals, including lead, carbonate, arsenic, and mercury. While attempts were made to use many of the mineral preparations as drugs, most proved to be toxic to be used in this manner. So a lot of people dying of mercury poison back then. So.
Right. I've got a crazy Mercury story, and it's not Freddie Mercury. It is with the album.
That's disappointing, Reese. But continue.
when I was a teenager, I was in a band, and the drummer, we used to practice in his garage, and his dad worked in a steelworks, and he had a bucket of mercury in the garage just there on the site, and we used to play with it. It was really cool to play with. We're like, oh.
You did not.
That explains the odd shape of your head.
As a child, you physically touched
and
played
with... No, I was a teenager.
You physically touched and played with mercury on a regular basis.
It was like Terminator 2. It was great.
And 15 years later, that boy grew up to have testicular cancer.
This explains so much about you, Reese. Oh, my God.
I didn't eat it, but...
You don't have to. It absorbs through the skin, man. You know that's why Mad Hatters are called Mad Hatters, right?
He sounded so guilty. I didn't eat it.
You were so proud to say that, too. You're like, yeah. I didn't eat it.
No.
Like, I'm not stupid.
I do have some standards when it comes to handling toxic elements.
Jesus. Many
plant-derived medications employed by ancient civilizations are still in use today. Egyptians treated constipation with cinnapods and castor oil. So I guess apparently we still do that today. I don't know. When you guys get constipated, do you grab your cinnapods?
What the hell's a cinnapod?
I don't fucking know.
I just eat tacos, man.
Sounds like a dinosaur.
It does. It does. What exactly is castor oil? I've heard of it before, but I don't really even
It's like a fish oil, right? It's like an oil made from fish, I think.
Oh, is that what it is?
You have a spoonful of it, and it tastes horrible, and it helps clear you out, I think.
It's basically like a water slide for your poop.
That's the description, man. You should be in marketing, okay? That, what a slogan. Honest to God.
I'd rather have a lazy river.
Reese wants a lazy river, you know. He likes to, like, you know, have a beer while he's doing it, you know, just like sort of relax.
2 hours is fine.
I have a lazy river story that I can't believe I'm about to say on a podcast, but I'm gonna
I like it.
So I was in a lazy river with some theme park.
You had a bucket of mercury with you.
So we're in these tubes, just little basically tubes like donuts floating down the lazy river, and then we all come to this is great. I've never been to a lazy river before, and we all come to this corner, and whatever reason it's like, I don't know, badly designed or something, it becomes congested. There's like 20 different people in lazy tubes just kind of bumping into one another. And then becomes this giant pile of people just congested, bumping into other people who are in shorts, in little tubes, and they're not flowing anywhere. So we're all just in one big pile. And we're there for like 2, 3, 4 minutes, and nobody is saying anything. And it's getting weird, man, because more people just keep coming down the corner, and no one's moving past this point. And so, like, I'm in the middle of like 20 people surrounding me. It's 20 half-naked people sitting in tubes, and no one saying anything. And I couldn't help myself, man. I broke the silence, and I yelled out loud, "Okay, who towed my ass?" And I thought it would get a laugh. It did not. It was even more awkward silence after that. So
everyone was just concerned, like, is there someone underneath the water towing people's asses? Yes.
And was it little toe or big toe? That'd be my concern. I'm not so worried about little toes.
Yeah, little toes, like, ooh, that was kind of nice, you know?
Yeah, you can breathe through that.
It'd be odd if you'd be able to tell.
Yeah, exactly. Who is stuffing their pinky toe in my rectum at the very moment?
That feels like a middle toe.
That feels like a middle toe.
Yeah. I'm glad I got that out there into podcast world. You're welcome, listener.
You know, Jesse, I feel like you've been dying to say that to somebody for a very long time.
Oh, God, it's just like a relief now.
Was this last week?
Yep. Okay, sorry for interrupting your.
No,
your
that is that is the name. That is your
story about assholes.
That is
so.
What we do. That is what we do. Ancient Chinese physicians administered ma huang, a plant containing epinephrine, for a variety of treatments. Today,
I have a feeling that you pronounce Asian words the way Reese pronounces French words.
You mean wrong?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not popular with French Canadians.
That's probably a good thing.
I'm terrible at the English language. And then anytime I try to pronounce anything that's outside of that, it just gets worse. But I, as Greg told me a couple episodes ago, just say it with confidence and move on. So I'm pronouncing all of this wrong, but I'm okay with that.
Just say Massachusetts and just own it.
Massachusetts.
Exactly. Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Yep. Sounds nice.
I was hoping I could chime in with my lazy river story.
Oh, yes.
You have
please.
A lazy river story.
You know what? This is going to be a lazy river episode.
I love that we're alternating between ancient medicine and lazy river stories.
I'm really glad I gave up my Memorial Day weekend to do all the research. But go ahead. Please, Greg.
Yeah, I'm curious. I want to hear
it's,
now.
It's not a great story. It just, you know, I once got a little bit drunk and went to the old Six Flags, which is an amusement park, and they have a big water park.
Greg used to work at a Six Flags.
I did. I got fired from there.
Gross incompetence.
That's right. There's kids and adults, and we're floating in the river, and like a 3-year-old's like next to me, and he's having fun. And I go, "Hey, are you having fun?" And he goes, "Yeah, I peed like 15 seconds ago." So I got out of the lazy
river.
Well,
hey, man, he was living free, you know?
Yeah, man.
It's the ultimate lazy river moment right there.
His mom That's was like right amazing. Behind him going, "Stop it!"
He was probably having a boost of epinephrine. So.
And then some weird middle-aged man started screaming, "Who's towing my ass?"
Wasn't that a great day?
Yeah. I didn't realize you guys were together that day.
I got like 3 phone numbers. I was looking for the toe guy.
All right, I want to learn about drugs.
All right, today epinephrine is used in many pharmaceuticals intended for the treatment of cold and allergy symptoms. The Greek physician Galen included opium in squill among the drugs in his apothecary shop.
So squill.
Yeah, exactly.
For treating colds? Opium?
No.
Opium will treat fucking anything if you take enough of it, man. Like, just
it fixes sadness for sure.
Squill sounds like a paste made from quails. Is that what it is?
Oh, gross.
It's a flower. It's a coastal flower, but it turns out so close today. Close. They no longer use it for medicine, but it is one of the main ingredients in rat poison.
Oh, God.
What is it?
Squill.
Squill. I'm actually writing a script right now that has rat poison in it, so that's very interesting. I might look that up. Thank you very much.
The thing that's interesting is that I found that that on my wife's grocery list.
rat poison? Squill.
For Greg.
Times 10.
Under the yeah. For Greg section, yeah.
Yeah, for Greg. There's battery acid. And
a tarp.
You know, we have a saying on our podcast, if we can help one guy in his screenplay writing, we've done our job. So
there we go.
What?
So,
is that our saying?
No, he said he was writing the screenplay. Okay. So I don't know.
Is our episode over now?
Yeah, that's it.
I think the whole podcast is over. Because we helped somebody finally.
Congratulations.
Just workshopping Jesse's script.
It definitely peaked.
Pharmaceutical science improved markedly in the 16th and 17th centuries. In 1546, the first pharmacopoeia, or collected list of drugs and medicinal chemicals with directions for making pharmaceutical preparations, appeared in Nuremberg, Germany. Previous to this time, medical preparations had varied in concentration and even in constituents. Other pharmacopoeias followed in Basel, Augsburg, and London in 1618. The London Pharmacopoeia became mandatory for the whole of England and thus became the first example of a national pharmacopoeia. Another important advance was initiated by Paracelsus. A 16th century Swiss physician chemist advocated the use of chemistry to study the preparation of medicines rather than the use of alchemy.
Oh my God, how long was alchemy being studied for? Like, when did that stop?
Has it?
Essential oils are pretty much alchemy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Bath bombs.
It's now, yeah. Yep. Once they got the bubbles to tickle your balls just right, that was that's where they knew they were like.
I wonder what the qualifications were for being a 16th century physician.
I think if you just owned a saw.
You owned a saw and you didn't pass out when you saw blood. That was pretty much the only two things you needed.
Confidence as well.
It was lumberjacks after they cleared off all the trees. They're like, well, fuck, what are we going to do now? I'm going to cut that guy's leg off.
That guy's leg doesn't look good.
I read a thing once saying that a lot of people who spent a lot of time on battlefields became surgeons because there was just so much like carnage because they were still using like swords and arrows and everything. It was just like you could literally see inside a lot of bodies, and that's how a lot of surgeons learned was
you fucking love talking about this shit, don't you? Jesus.
Remember when Luke Skywalker was riding on that fucking thing in the snow and he had to look inside that body?
He had to like cut it open and climb in for warmth.
Yeah.
Wampa.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He was a surgeon.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's like they either become Jedi's or they become surgeons. So,
I'm saying Wampa like I know what I'm talking about. I'm just gonna do that real quick. Just make sure it is. Is it a Wampa? It is. It's a no. A Wampa. That's not a Wampa. Fuck. A Wampa's the big monster in the cave, the ice cave. Shit.
But considering Jedi are supposed to like keep life, think life is precious, he used an animal as a sleeping bag.
That's true. The whole thing is
for a long time. It was just a temporary overnight sleeping bag.
It was really cold. Yeah. And I don't think whatever the fuck that thing was had a lightsaber. So you know.
Hold on. Let me Google.
Nor did it have thumbs.
Fuck
so
did
really,
Luke crawl? That's just,
are you Googling into what was the sleeping bag?
Yeah, what the fuck did Luke crawl into and sleep? Is what I Googled.
I really wish I was from Wales so I could say cool sentences like that. Are you really Googling?
No, hey. We established we cannot do accents on this show. We're certainly not going to start now.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Exactly. Although
Reese does
as well.
Fantastic really... Canadian accent.
Does he?
Hi, I'm Canadian.
Dead.
That's all I can do is that sentence.
Three. Well, so Reese, actually, it was kind of fascinating. You bring up all the like war guys. A lot of the American pharmaceutical companies, the guys who started those back in the like mid 19th century, were all like
Jedi's
surgeons on the battlefield in the Civil War.
Oh no way!
There you go.
Yeah. So
there we go.
You're fucking smart, man.
Yeah, he's smart.
I read a book once and I remembered a sentence.
I remember things.
Kevin and I are about to be fired from this podcast. Welcome to History Defeats Itself with Jesse and Reese.
Sorry, we'll start our own one called Canadian Politics is Boring.
Nice.
It's fascinating.
Canadian politics is awesome.
Canadian politics is just like a big lazy river.
You have a podcast called Canadian Politics is Awesome, where all you do is badmouth our podcast.
Oh, I've been doing that online for a while now.
Are you the one who gave us the review calling me a foreign leftist?
Did you really? Is that true? Did you really get that?
Yes.
Yeah. We printed a T-shirt with it on.
Yeah. He's been turning our. I'm not making this up. I wish I were. Reese has been turning our shitty 1-star reviews into T-shirts that have been selling.
Yes.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
That is fantastic.
Monetize hate. That's what I say.
Monetize hate. That's so, Reese's slogan.
That's your brand. That's your brand right there. I love it.
What are some of the catchphrases? What you got?
Just dumb and bad was
just
another one.
Just dumb and bad. Yeah.
The other one was a very bad podcast.
That's really specific, but general at the same time.
Yeah.
Somebody else said if they could punch a podcast, they would.
A very punchable podcast. Yeah.
A very punchable podcast.
Wow.
That's
what did you do to deserve that, you think?
We're just being ourselves.
They just had an episode.
Yeah.
Now coming to you live, Canada's most punchable podcast.
That DeSerrano is really starting to is warming me up.
DeSerrano, that's a good pull.
Wow. Yeah.
Nice.
DeSerrano. Oh yeah.
Is that? Did you bring that, or is that just in the Airbnb?
Yeah, I brought it. Okay. Wouldn't that be something?
Drinks
yeah.
cabinet with the hits from the 70s.
Broke into the liquor cabinet.
Yeah.
All right.
Leave a loony on top of the DeSerrano cap.
Yeah.
See, John, a loony.
I know what a loony is. Okay. It's a cartoon, right?
That's yeah. No. Yeah. We're the only, I think, I don't know of any other countries that have cute nicknames for their money.
I think everybody does it.
Really? I don't think so.
Let's our $1,
Let's our $1 coin is a loony.
Like
our $2
a coin
is
in
a,
the UK is called a quid.
That's not a cute nickname. That's
literally
the name
of. It's called a fiver.
What is a quid? What is a quid?
£1.
It's a pound. Okay, got it.
Or 100 pence, if you want to.
They're not the actual names. Those are cute nicknames.
What the fuck is a pence?
A pence is like cents. So like 10
oh,
pence.
Right, right.
Yeah,
got it.
Someone
got
has
it.
Obviously never watched Monty Python.
No, exactly.
That's where I learned all my cute little English words.
From Monty Python?
Yeah. Don't say from... You're not allowed to say from Monty Python like that.
I love Monty Python. I'm just fucking with you.
Now, Benny Hill, that guy was a dick.
Was he?
No.
I didn't know that.
I think that was the first like breast I saw on television. Was
yeah,
the Benny Hill
I mean...
Show.
Was Benny Hill's?
Yeah. No, it was just one. It was just one. Yeah.
He did have three nipples.
Yakety sax.
He's juggling his own boobs on TV.
In the 1800s, many important compounds were isolated from plants for the first time.
No segue, no transition, straight back to learning.
Just what we do. That's what we do here on History Defeats Itself. Yeah, we just get right back into it.
I don't know how to, like, speaking of breasts, the 1800s. many important compounds were isolated from plants for the first time. Around 1804, the active ingredient morphine was isolated from opium. In 1820, quinine for the treatment of malaria was isolated from cinchona bark.
Isn't quinine in tonic water?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So you can just, if you just drink gin and tonics, you won't get malaria.
Is it quinine?
I thought it was quinine.
Quinine, I forget how to pronounce it, but if you drink quinine with alcohol, it actually intensifies the effect of alcohol on your system without you having to actually drink more alcohol, which is why gin and tonics are so damn popular.
That is a pro tip.
Thank you.
That is a pro
They
tip.
Make me break out in hives.
Oh.
Okay, less pro tippy.
Yeah.
Of course, you need a lot of quinine to actually make that happen, and the amount that's in tonic is probably not enough. Maybe just enough to give you a little boop, little boost, but you can go and get quinine in much larger doses. That it's like a party drug. Here, take this. Have a shot of vodka. Be fucked for the next 5 hours sort of thing.
Right. So. And I think by hives, John meant herpes.
You don't understand how herpes works, because
I keep getting hives on my nuts. I don't know what's going on.
It must be that genitalics.
That's right.
Sorry for interrupting the learning with more learning. Please continue.
Well, so is it cinchona? Is that how you say it? Cinchona bark? Because that's the bark you were talking about.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
You can
that.
Chew on. Yeah, no, well, that's the bark. Yeah, you can chew on it, and it has malaria. Helps. Yeah. Anyway.
Cinchona? Cinchona. What? Is that what it's called?
Cinchona?
What did you say? What did you call it?
I said cinchona.
Cinchona. All right.
Yeah, but
let's
I don't
just,
know.
You know what? Let's just go with cinchona.
I mean, we've established many times. I can't say words. <fucking know. laughs>
Let's just skip to the end, John.
it's the cholo bark.
All right, good.
And yeah, and then colchicine for gout treatment from autumn coracus. In 1833, atropine, which had a variety of uses, was purified from Atropa belladonna. And in 1860, our favorite drug, cocaine, a local anesthetic, was isolated from coca leaves. So somebody in 1860 was like, you know, if I take this shit and I put something in it, I'll get a powder, and then I can snort that powder, and then I'll go to cool Hollywood parties.
You know, it's like what we talk about a lot on this show. People just are always looking for ways to get fucked up. Like throughout the history of humankind, like people just were always like, man, I do not want to live in reality. What can I do to escape?
I know, right? Cocaine actually blows my mind. Honestly, like it's the concept of cocaine and where it came from. You know, like someone walking through the jungle, they come across this tree, you know, or you know, this leaf, and they're like, you know what I really want to do? I want to take those leaves and I want to grind them into a fine, fine powder, and then I want to sniff it up into my nose and just see what happens.
Just try it out, you know? It's like smoking, it's like weed or something. It's like, how many things did they smoke before they found marijuana? You know, like, what were they smoking? You know, like, and what was
ashes.
Like, hey, there's that plant. Let's just like grind it up a little bit and throw it in something and light it on fire and see what happens, you know?
Somebody had a list one day which said things in nature that make me high. Just process of elimination, crossing out, smoking, sniffing, and injecting every plant.
You know, I tried smoking dandelions. That didn't work. All right, let's cross that off the list.
We licked this frog. We got high. We licked that one. We died.
So the second frog, not the ideal frog.
Don't lick the red frogs.
Don't lick the red frog.
Oh, they will fuck you up. In 1842, ether was first employed as an anesthetic during surgery, and chloroform followed soon after in 1847. These agents revolutionized the practice of surgery, helping to reduce the pain felt by patients. So before this time, the way that doctors dealt with
pain...
Did
you say, sorry for interrupting, you said ether?
Yes. Yeah, they would basically knock you out with ether. Yeah,
they put it on a rag. I've seen that in movies before.
No joke here for a second. I thought ether was the theoretical substance between atoms in the vacuum of space.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, me too.
Seriously. Like, isn't that like
what? Isn't it? Can it not be both? Or
I guess no. I'm dead serious. I'm not making that up. Like, I thought that's what that was. That's. Am I wrong?
It's actually,
that? Is that
it,
not
it
what
is
that's
actually
called?
Pronounced and spelled the same way. In the ether or taking ether. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. Cool. I had no idea.
No.
When you take that stuff in space. And you put it on a rag, and you inhale it, you get pretty fucked up.
That's why people go to space.
That's why people go. That's why we went to space in the first place. Give a shit about the moon.
Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin are like, man, we're going to get fucked up on the moon, man.
they just try to smoke it.
Buzz. Smart. Yeah, Lance. Buzz. What is it, Lance?
This tank is 80% oxygen, 20% ether.
Take your helmet out and take a big sniff. Just trust me with this.
Jesse, you're going to love what I'm going to say next. Imagine surgery without anesthetic.
No.
Disgust.
Well, that's, so
Disgust.
The things is like surgeons, if you're a good surgeon, it was based on how fast you were.
Wow.
Well, without anesthetic, I believe that.
Yeah. Speed surgery is a forgotten field.
So it's similar to speed dating or speed reading. You know?
It sounds like a fucked up game show.
I'm going to get in. God. I'm going to get out. It's going to be like a bank robbery.
Oh, shit. Another one died.
You're like a magician. Like, and where's your kidney?
Sleight of hand with your organ.
Have you guys ever watched the show The Nick on HBO Max?
I have, actually. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's very so good. Yeah. It's set, like, it's 1900, and it's about surgeons. Or about like this hospital. It's a fantastic show.
It's not for the squeamish. That is for sure.
Never watched that. Yeah, I couldn't watch that.
They just steal dead bodies to practice on, don't they? That's
a big part of the show. Yeah.
And pigs, and they do a lot of, and they smoke a lot of opium. You know, like you did in the 1900s.
Yeah. So. Like John, you would have fit in really well there. You've always wanted to chase the dragon.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know. I mean, as soon as we get off, I'm going to be chasing that dragon. I got my opium in the mail. You know.
In the mail?
Yeah.
It's a new program.
it's door opium. I don't know. It's the new drug delivery program by DoorDash.
Isn't that what Obamacare is about?
Because he cares if you have opium or not.
Door-to-door opium delivery. Thanks, Obama.
Oh, God, I wish. These agents revolutionize the practice of surgery, helping to reduce the pain felt by patients. After their introduction, careful attention could be paid to prevention of tissue damage, and longer and more complex surgical procedures could be carried out more safely.
And slowly, more importantly.
One of the biggest problems with ether was it was very flammable, and they were always doing surgeries under candlelight, so they did have a problem with people catching on fire.
Well, they were probably also smoking. Are you fucking serious?
Smoking while they do it.
No, they really did. They had a huge problem.
Ashing into a kidney. Yeah,
like, oh, man. That's still this fucking
Oh, my God. It's going to give me
Doctor, we left the whatever in there. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
I think the ashtray's still in there. Just sew them up.
I just insist on them like doing surgery outdoors in the daytime. Thank you. I don't care if there's bees or anything. Just do it. It's fine.
You wouldn't care if you were allergic to bees. So.
I would.
Look, Reese, we can't do surgery during the day. There's a lot of bees out. We're going to have to do it at night under candlelight. The bees go away then. There's mosquitoes, but there's no bees.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, and then the problem with chloroform, because that was another thing they used to knock people out.
Wait a minute.
I love that podcast.
Greg's like, there's no problem with chloroform.
The problem with chloroform was the name of my band in college. No one's ever said that sentence before, the problem with chloroform.
Well, no,
it's the problem after chloroform.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the only people who say that are serial killers. Yeah. The problem with chloroform is, you know, it just kind of gets all over
them. They pass out, and they get so heavy. You don't want them completely out. You want them manageable. That's what you want. You want them manageable. But no, it causes severe liver damage.
Oh,
yeah. You know, right. So you make it out of your heart surgery only to die of liver.
When you're trying to get someone to pass out so you can take them somewhere and murder them, you really don't want them to have liver damage.
I was thinking more of surgery, but yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, gotcha,
that's a good
gotcha.
Point. Yeah.
Well, you just say while you're in there, sort my liver out as well. Right. Surgery.
And a breast implant. Because why not?
In 1853, the French surgeon Charles Gabriel Pravaz invented
say it. He loves French.
Yeah, he loves French.
All right, say it. Go for it.
Charles Gabriel Pravaz. Good French?
Spot on.
We should do a podcast together just called Words.
My 9-year-old son corrected my French. He's doing French in elementary school. And I said, tout le monde. And he was like, no, it's tout le monde. And I was embarrassed by a 9-year-old. It's like, I've been to France more than you.
So he doesn't get any supper.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can still control that.
He hasn't been out of his room in a week.
Oh, he's only allowed to eat croissants.
And only if he pronounces them croissants. Yeah. Like his dad.
Well, so this French surgeon, he invented the hollow hypodermic needle, which was first used in the treatment of disease in the same year by Scottish physician Alexander Wood. Now, because drugs could be injected directly into the bloodstream, rapid and dependable drug action became more readily producible. Development of the hollow hypodermic needle also led to an understanding that drugs could be administered by multiple routes and was of a great significance for the development of the modern science of pharmaceuticals.
Were these needles like hose pipes at the time?
Probably. They probably were. It was
you know, I feel like John is... Like every, because we'll all laugh and we'll tell an anecdotal story and we'll all take a drink, and then there'll be a tiny little lull, and then John just goes straight back into teaching, and it's like we're at a party, okay, and the four of us,
I like that.
Like having Reese, fun, Greg, and, he's and an Kevin, asshole. And me, yes. We're all like drunk and just tell weird stories,
yeah.
And then John just wants to tell us like he's not very good at parties or with women, and he just wants to tell us like what he learned at school that day, you know, and there's like. Like a little lull in the conversation. He's like, "Oh, yeah. This is my inn." And it's like, "And in 1857, guys." Like,
everybody's like, "Thanks, Buzz Killington."
You nailed the entire format of our podcast. So yes, John does not get laid. That's what it should make.
Sorry, please continue, John.
Yeah, now continue.
It's also really like just... the theme of our podcast is kind of shitting on whoever's leading. So this is going great.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
We'll continue it.
This is the best fucking episode ever. So.
This is the best party ever.
John's like, I'm still on page one, by the way.
Yeah, I'm like, skip the 19th century. We're going to skip the 20th century. So do you guys, so now we're going to have a little quiz. Do you guys know all the ways you can have a drug administered in your body?
Yes.
Rectally?
Rectally.
Orally.
I was going to say anally.
That's what I said. Yep.
It's the same thing. Rectally, anally.
You can push it in your eye.
What?
Hypodermic needle, a hollow one.
Yep.
There's always like a glass. You could drink it through that.
Yeah, you can drink it.
Yeah, that's orally. That's orally. That's what
nasally.
You call
nasally.
Yeah. Yeah. Nasally.
If I listen to this episode any longer, it's gonna get me high.
Ass to mouth. That's a. Is that a?
yes. That is.
Wait. Yep. I think we're off topic.
Human centipede branch of medicine.
A lot of people don't know, but that's actually the correct way to take a suppository. Somebody puts it in your ass and then they shit it in your mouth.
That's actually why we wanted to get five guys onto a podcast.
isn't there one method that now they use that is like an injection, but it doesn't actually go, doesn't pierce the skin. It just somehow like blasts it through your skin. I don't know if that was just made
like
up.
Like a hypodermic needle from Star Trek?
Is that a Star Trek thing? I don't know.
Reese, I don't think you should keep going to that doctor.
That reminded me of that movie No Country for Old Men, where like he had
the cattle.
The cow killer.
The thing that kills the cows and that.
Yeah, you administer it through the skull. That's how you do it.
I don't think that's a good way to administer a medication, right?
I've seen one of those used in real life with a real cow.
So you guys get most of them.
Okay. But you hear what? John, let's walk that one back for a second. Reese just said that he saw one being used on a real cow.
Yeah, I was filming at a slaughterhouse, and we filmed the whole process from basically cow walking in, and it left it as various packaged meat and leather for Italian car seats.
Damn, Jesse, you weren't kidding. He's kind of fucked up, huh?
Yeah, I know.
Were you eating like a cheeseburger at the end of it?
Yeah. Like, let's go for lunch.
There was like a McDonald's stand right at the end.
But the best part was the guy who owned the slaughterhouse. They were lovely, lovely people. But he said they sometimes bring school kids down so they can learn where their food comes from.
Oh my God.
If you're going to eat it, you better figure out where it comes
from. That's true. You better know.
No, that is completely wrong. What is the old that saying? Like, if you enjoy sausage, don't watch how it's made.
Right?
Yeah, but I don't know. I disagree with that.
But anyway, those things are horrible. My point, I guess I was trying to make is those, the No Country for Old Men, that tool is, it works. It actually works.
Effective.
Thanks, Reese.
Good.
So if anyone's out there is looking to kill anybody, just a cow.
Just find a poorly managed slaughterhouse.
You see Reese flipping a coin.
And he's got a bowl cut for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Coen brothers are following him around.
So, yeah, so the two that we didn't get, guys, you missed Vaginal.
And, no, we didn't. And
I miss Vaginal.
I love that. After that.
And epidermal. So,
is that the skin one?
Is that the thing that Reese was talking about?
No, that's just like an ointment. Yeah, you just rub it on your skin and your body absorbs it. The thing that Reese was talking about doesn't exist. So.
No. Only in sci-fi films.
Right.
And slaughterhouses.
All right. Let's see. The prevention of infectious diseases took place near the beginning of the 19th century with the introduction of smallpox vaccine, which if we go back to, what was that your first episode, Greg, the vaccine one?
I don't think so. I think my first one was I Love John Banks.
No, your first one was vaccines.
It was?
Yeah.
Oh. So that were the milkmaids who were getting...
Yeah, exactly.
And didn't they harvest the vaccine from, like, warts or something on their bodies?
Or from pus. From, like, boils, basically.
Yes. Yeah,
it was
damn, I really wish I was eating something right now.
Well, you could eat ass. I mean, I can't like that.
Okay, now you're ruining eating ass. Fucking John, man.
Sorry, Mom. Yeah. Sorry.
Your mom listens to this show?
No. My parents don't even fucking know how to work the goddamn podcast platform.
My mom listens to my show no matter how many times I ask her not to.
I think my parents listen to like maybe the first two and then they're like, eh, I'm glad he's doing something.
You know what? He made it further than we thought he would.
Yeah.
So. So did you guys know that a human male will fill up in his lifetime almost 3 5-gallon buckets of semen? I mean, he won't actually put it in there, but that's how much semen you produce.
Is that actually in the pharmaceutical research, or is that a callback?
I just wanted to tell him because I just feel like
we did learn that in a previous episode. Three Home Depot buckets.
Oh, my God. What do your notes look like, man? Jesus Christ. In the 1800s, they invented like the five different ways to apply drugs. 1900s, bucket of semen. Just like.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from either.
Three buckets of semen.
Oh, God.
In the late 1790s, the English surgeon Edward Jenner observed that milkmaids who had been infected with the relative benign cowpox virus were protected against the much more deadly smallpox. So after this observation, he developed an immunization process based on the use of crude material from the cowpox lesions. So basically he would just like poke it and he would like get the pus and then poke it in you, I guess.
So, I mean, that's pretty accurate. I think it's good. John, I'm thinking of dumbing it down.
Dip the pus and poke it in ya.
The success was followed in 1885 by the development of rabies vaccine by the French chemist and microbiologist Louis Pasteur. And
you know what that guy's famous for?
For the rabies vaccine?
Pasteurization.
Like pasteurization, buddy.
No.
Oh, neat.
Son of a bitch.
That's wow. Neat. I didn't know that.
You know what, Greg? You should take this thing over.
Okay.
That was easy.
I'll take it from here, guys. So what's the topic again? I can't remember.
Buckets of semen.
Semen.
Three
semen
buckets of semen.
Through the ages. Yeah.
Also, yeah, it's called 15 gallons.
Could you imagine like carrying all those buckets through the office? Did you ever see that episode of The Office where Kevin like spills that big bucket of chili?
Chili.
Yeah. So imagine you're carrying your buckets of semen around and the same thing happens to you.
I need it for my entire life.
That would be a bummer because if you were saving that, that's a lot of effort. Like, that's a whole lot of effort in there.
I was saving those for my 40s and 50s.
And if you're up to the fifth bucket, it means you're like really old too.
Or just really active. I mean, in masturbation. Right.
You're ahead of the average, I guess. Sorry.
Listeners, we're going to take a small break. And when we come back, we're going to not be talking about semen.
Possible.
I hope that ad is for semen.
Ha 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 ha
All right. Well, welcome back to the show.
We hope you enjoy that commercial about semen.
All right. So in 18, we're gonna jump in. So 1899, aspirin became the most effective and popular anti-inflammatory, analgesic, and antipyretic drug for at least the next 60 years. Cocaine, derived from the coca leaf, which we talked about, was the only known local anesthetic until about 1900, when the synthetic compound benzocaine was introduced. And basically, it was a little bit more effective and a lot less toxic. So that's all. Like, so that's like right at the turn of the 19th century into the 20th century is when they started to figure out how to synthesize these chemicals and make safer versions of it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Which what happened was a lot earlier than I would have thought.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
Especially because science was still pretty new as well.
Yeah. Right. I was thinking maybe like the 90s.
Yeah. So, 6 weeks ago? Like,
yeah. Right, yeah. They were like, oh, grunge music. Oh my God, guys, I figured out how to synthesize cocaine.
I was listening to this Nirvana track, and then all of a sudden I'm like, whoa.
See, Jesse, grunge was a movement that happened out of Seattle, and there was like Nirvana and Sanger. I just figured you don't know anything about hockey, so you didn't know
about grunge. Thank you. No, that's smart, yeah. Appreciate that.
Or Property Brothers. Because everyone knows the Property Brothers were in the grunge scene back in the day.
Sure.
I'd love to see goth versions of the Property Brothers.
So I actually don't know what Property Brothers is. I have no fucking idea what that
Yay!
Is.
Yeah.
Two twin brothers making a lot of money.
You guys really do need a show. Like, you can just rail on sports and Property Brothers and meet Greg and Reese and...
Yeah. John and you could call it John and Jesse Know Nothing.
This thing writes itself.
At least the episode will be shorter.
It's great. They're all 7-minute episodes.
Hi, I'm Jesse. I'm John. Goodbye.
Apothecaries moved into wholesale production of drugs such as morphine. It's quinine, right? I'm saying quinine.
I think so.
And strychnine. That's what that is. The strychnine.
And Streisland.
Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Strychnine. Yeah.
In the middle of the 19th century, and dye and chemical companies that established research labs and discovered medical applications for their products starting in the 1880s. Merck, for example, began as a small apothecary shop in Darmstadt, Germany, in 1668, only beginning to transition towards an industrial and scientific concern in 1827 by manufacturing.
You said you were going to skip the fucking 1800s, dude.
No, that was all right.
Going back.
I saw 1899.
Yeah, and then he went to 16 something.
And then there was some people, and they made some more shit, and then they made more shit, and then there was a war. They called it the Great War because they thought it was going to be the only one like that, but they were wrong. There were two of them. And so this is like kind of interesting. So Bayer was a German company, and so when World War I broke out.
Oh, I know this story. This is interesting.
Yeah.
Like Bayer, the paint company.
Well, yeah. So they're a chemical company. Company? Bayer aspirin.
Like Bayer's aspirin. You've heard of like Bayer.
Oh, Bayer.
Bayer. Yeah.
But Bayer.
He said Bayer like it's a fucking animal.
He did.
It was like when Greg did a whole episode about bullying, and every time he said it, he said bowling.
Bullying. You know how hard it is to say bullying?
You just did it.
Yeah, but it's like you have to say it 6,000 times. You guys are fucking bullying.
You're bullying me about my bowling. So yeah, so basically there was you had Merck in Germany and then you had Merck in the US, but it was still German owned, and basically they had a patent to like Bayer aspirin. They had the patent for aspirin. Aspirin.
Yeah, Aspirin's resort. Beautiful,
so,
you know.
Yeah, it is beautiful. Yeah. And so they, when World War I broke out, the U.S. like completely lost the right to the patent, and they took over the company, which is now today. Merck is one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world, but it's an American. Like part of it or half of it is like an American based company. Even like when they started going over to England and stuff. So you have two different companies. Or you did. They actually, everybody fucking merged like in the 90s. So now you basically have Pfizer and I don't know, some other fucking company.
Jesse,
so,
can we fact check this? Because it sounds like
Please add it if you know.
My internet conked out for about 20 seconds there, so I don't know if you mentioned how Bayer was also the inventor of heroin.
No, I did not. I did not bring that up.
Okay. Were you about to?
No. I wasn't.
Did I just ruin this podcast?
Yeah, it was in the turn of the century. Bayer, who was like Bayer's aspirin, they invented heroin as we know it today, pretty much, in the form of, you know, like injectable heroin and whatnot. And it was like as a miracle cure to everything. Doesn't matter what ails you, this will make you feel better. And it did.
My children won't go to sleep. Heroin.
My leg hurts. Heroin.
This podcast brought to you by Bayer's aspirin.
Also, wasn't World War One was when plastic surgery started to come around with all the people who came home horribly disfigured? They were wards of people, and I think a lot of the like rhinoplasty and kind of reconstructive surgery was kind of pioneered after World War One.
I didn't know that.
I think.
You know what? I can't argue against that. So cool.
No one's going to disagree with me, so I'm right.
I don't feel like Googling that right now in real time. That sounds like a lot of
effort. Remember I saw Boardwalk Empire, and they had that character that was a World War One veteran, and he had like half of a... Remember he had half of that face?
Yeah,
he
had like the face.
Phantom of the Opera thing going on.
Yeah. Like a painted face kind of a thing. So...
Mixing a little drink here.
That was
solid reference. Hang on, he needs some more Di Serrano.
and Jameson. So I'm going to try that little mixture
together.
That is terrifying, by the way.
Okay. We see how you work.
What is Di Serrano? Like, is that like a liqueur? Like, what's going on with that?
Yeah, it's like a it's like an orangish liqueur. It's delicious. It's very good. Okay. And cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
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 All right, John, ruin this party. Keep going.
I have feelings.
We're all just hanging out, drinking, and
poor John drew the first guest episode. We switch off who leads, and that just sucks for you, John.
Yeah. The period between Jesse going fucking himself and 1918 and 1939 was marked by two breakthroughs that was marked by three breakthroughs. The first was insulin that could treat diabetes up until that point, a fatal condition. So if you had diabetes, you were fucked. And the second was penicillin. So that would cure wouldn't cure herpes, but it would cure a lot of the other stuff you got.
What year was this again?
Penicillin was 1928.
I knew it was around the 1930s and that was the first iteration of antibiotics. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Did you? I read about this. This is again. I don't mean to interject with my own tidbits of information, but
that's why we're doing a podcast. Be weird if you were quiet.
I just enjoy silently.
We have two guests here. They're not going to say anything, but they're here.
But they're, trust us.
I went to a friend's house once, and she collected old things. I like old things, old trinkets, old books, stuff like that. And one of them was a book, and it was about this thick. It was really thick. And the whole thing was a book. It was like from the early 1900s, before antibiotics were even existed or discovered. And it was about how to treat, I believe, chlamydia, right? An entire book on how to treat chlamydia. And today,
and what is this book called? And who wrote it? And where can I get it?
Yeah.
Well,
maybe just give us some bullet points.
I can't really read very well, so just it could be the gist of it.
No, but that's not what I was going to say. Is a lot of people don't know that the sun acts as a natural antibiotic. It's true. So like hospitals were designed.
That's why Venus never gets sick.
No, if you had wounds, if you had open wounds, and they were infected, before antibiotics were discovered, they would actually design hospitals with sunning rooms. So if you had like an infected wound, you'd just go and you'd sit in the sun for like a week and
what about
it
bees?
Would become healed. You
Reese is very concerned about the bee situation.
So what if you have crabs, you're just supposed to like sit out in the sun naked?
Yeah, just put your junk out and
yeah, that's how it works. That's that, no, but it's just interesting that the politics behind get, because everyone knew that if you had some sort of bacterial infection, you just had to go out into the sun a lot, and that would actually that would genuinely help you. And when antibiotics came out, they were having a difficult time convincing the public that like, hey, this is a thing and it works really, really well. And so they had to, I'm not kidding, they had to badmouth the sun, okay, in order to increase the sales of their antibiotics, which is why to this day we think that if we go out into the sun for 3 fucking minutes, we're gonna get cancer. Okay. They started the, it's true, the sun can give you skin cancer. Yes, that is very much a thing, but not nearly to the extent that we have been taught for the past 100 fucking years, because they wanted to increase the sales of antibiotics. Boom. Rant over. John, you may continue.
Get out of here.
I was going to say about insulin, because that was invented by a Canadian, and he gave the patent away for free because he knew that it was of benefit to the whole world, so that insulin could be made as cheaply as possible. But I know right now there's people in the US who can't afford a drug that was made free nearly 100 years ago.
Yeah, and they go to Canada to get it as well.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, is that
it's,
true?
It's crazy, yeah.
Wow. Or Cuba. Cuba. Yeah, no, Cuba has a fantastic like social health program. I mean, they're failing in a lot of other ways, but that they nailed that. So,
and literacy rates are like one of the highest in the world. It's crazy. I mean, it's not perfect, wow. But
it's like you build me up and then you just shatter it.
Yeah, like, I was all ready to move to Cuba, and then
it's not perfect.
So with the invent of penicillin, or discovery of penicillin, that was the first time a government-supported international collaboration happened with pharmaceutical companies. So the U.S. government, along with Merck, Pfizer, and Squibb, worked on mass-producing the drug during World War II. And it actually ended up saving thousands and thousands of lives. Because, you know, you get shot, yeah. then you get an infection, and then you die.
Gangrene.
So, yep.
Trench dick.
is that a thing?
It's his favorite porn.
You had to be there, man.
It's his favorite porn.
Name your sex tape. I think trench dick was a World War One thing. So.
It's Dwayne Johnson's next film.
Dwayne the Rock Johnson is
trench
in
dick.
A film by Ron Howard.
Trench dick. Trench dick 2.
The reckoning.
About a detective in the trenches of World War II.
It's all very innocent.
As the 20th century progressed, the benefits of medical, chemical, and biological research began to be appreciated by the general public and by politicians, promoting governments to develop mechanisms to provide support for university research. In the United States, for instance, the National Institute of Health, the National Science Foundation, the Department of Agriculture, and many other agencies undertook their own research and supported research and discovery at universities that could then be used by pharmaceutical or be used for pharmaceutical development. That's kind of, and also around that time is like the American Heart Association, the Stroke Foundation of Canada. So that was my Canadian. Like, there you go, guys. Thanks.
Yay. Well done on the whole Stroke Foundation thing.
After the war, the arrival of social healthcare systems such as the UK's National Health Service, or NHS, in Europe created a much more structured system, both for prescription of drugs and their reimbursement. And in 1957, the NHS brought in what was essentially a price-fixing scheme to allow reasonable return on investment for drug manufacturers, solidifying the incentive to invest in new medicines. So,
yeah. And that's the thing, is that if you do buy prescription drugs, and in Wales, prescriptions are free to everyone.
What?
Well, not free. You pay for them with your taxes, but I mean, they're free at the point of delivery. But in England, you have to pay for them. But it'd be very easy just to drive across the border.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
I didn't know you had to pay. I thought they were free all across Great Britain.
No. Also that you have to pay for parking in England, but you don't have to pay to park at hospitals in Wales.
is England is Britain, is that privatized health insurance, or they have health insurance, or is it public there? I don't even know.
It's public, so it's universal healthcare
in Britain, but the prescriptions do not apply to that.
No, so the government will charge like a nominal fee. So it's like if you go to the dentist, you do have to pay for the dentist, but it's like a checkup is a fixed price. It's like, oh, that's going to be £30 for a checkup, and then certain kinds of surgeries are fixed at certain prices, and the government subsidizes it. So you're only ever going to pay an affordable amount to have any kind of work done.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that there's dentists in Great Britain?
There are. Both of them are really good.
They both have carpal tunnel, though. So much work.
That was good, Greg. That was good.
You've got beautiful teeth, Reese.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations.
I stare at them every time we're in the same room together.
They light up the room.
You know, I moved to Canada 3 years ago, and I still haven't got around to going to the dentist. So.
Well, in your defense, there was a pandemic.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That was one of the years.
In your defense, in the other two, I got nothing to defend you with on that one. Reese,
I was busy settling into a new country.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Raising your kids, you know.
John, this is where you say more boring things.
Yeah, I was just waiting for it.
No. I'm done. I'm done with you four fuckers. The U.S. pharmaceutical industry was booming thanks to being part of the world's biggest and most dynamic economy. Its growth was also helped by generous funding from the government, with the National Institute of Health seeing its federal funding rise to nearly $100 million by 1956. This investment fueled the development of drugs to come over the coming decades. Meanwhile, as the industry grew wealthy thanks to its growing portfolio of products, the potential ethical conflicts of making money from selling healthcare products became increasingly apparent. Dun dun dun. And here's where it all goes to shit.
So usually about this point in our podcast, things get dark.
So have any of you fellas been watching the Crime of the Century on HBO about the opioid epidemic, and specifically about Purdue?
What was it called again?
The Crime of the Century.
No, I've listened to a few podcasts about it with Purdue and the painkillers. I've not seen the series.
So the reason I actually ended up picking this topic was so that kind of inspired this, and then one of the guys in that series, I forget his name, but he wrote a book called Empire of Pain, and I started listening to it, and so basically Arthur Sackler and his two brothers Mortimer and something else.
Just make it up. You don't hear very often.
Greg Mortimer and Greg.
Mortimer.
They grew up. They were like teenagers when the Great Depression happened, or when the crash happened. And so they grew up. They went from being like their parents were doing really well, and then they lost everything, and then so they were kind of all like self-made. And what Arthur Sackler was really good at was advertising. So he was a doctor. He went to medical school, became a doctor. He also was really good at advertising. So he bought an advertising company, and so he basically kind of pioneered how. So they basically just lie. They would just say like this drug will cure, you know, it will keep your kids quiet, and you know, so they would do all these things, and they were really good at marketing drugs, and then eventually he bought Purdue, and then you know, and but
the,
like their
the university or the chicken company?
No, the drug company.
Oh, okay.
He bought Purdue and half a Chick-fil-A. So, but like that was in with the opioid epidemic. What they did was they basically. It's opium. That's all it is. So Oxycontin is just basically opium. But what makes it different is it's like layered, so it's time released. So you're getting a little bit at a time all day long. It's basically but what they did was like all these doctors, because you don't want to use opium on somebody unless it's kind of end of life treatment, right? So if you have somebody who's dying of cancer, it doesn't fucking matter if they get addicted to opium. Give them all the opium they want to, you know, give them all the morphine they want to kill the pain. So what they did was they started marketing in the like early 90s or late 80s, early 90s to basically say that it was because of the coding, it was non-addictive.
So yeah. It's like people like broke their leg and they got given these painkillers, and then after they got better, they ended up addicted.
Well,
to...
it was more like back injuries, like long term chronic pain. You know, so like people who have back injuries, back surgeries, people who like have, you know, like getting car wrecks and like have hip problems, that kind of stuff.
So they end up just addicted to opiates.
Yeah.
From that.
Is opiate addiction an issue in Canada?
Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very much. I've known people who've gone for surgeries and have become addicted to opiates due to the opiates that they've given them due to their surgeries. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Well, yeah, like fentanyl is 50 to 100 times stronger than opium.
So I didn't know that. I heard that fentanyl was extraordinarily lethal.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that it was also like a drug. I thought it was just something that, like, I didn't know what it was.
It's an opium. It's an opioid based. You know, it's just, I think it's synthetic, but it's an opioid. Like OxyContin is not synthetic. OxyContin is basically it is a manufactured drug, but it's the coating that makes it work. Where I think fentanyl is actually a synthetic version of opium. And it is fucking it's 50 to 100 times stronger. And it's it's like if you take 10 milligrams of OxyContin, it won't kill you. If you take 10 milligrams of fentanyl, it will probably kill you.
That's amazing and disturbing as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a problem because they're packing it in with heroin now, and there's a lot of people dying from fentanyl.
Yeah.
Without even knowing they're taking it.
So they made, like, in 2007 or 2007, the U.S. government had a case against Purdue, and it went all the way to the top. Like, basically, like, it was some guy in Western.
Sorry for interrupting. Is fentanyl a drug that's being manufactured by a pharmaceutical company?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, I think the patents already run out, so I think anybody can manufacture it, but yeah, there was a company that created it, and your patent on a pharmaceutical lasts 10 years.
That's our side hustle. Beside the podcast, we also manufacture fentanyl.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't you fucking badmouth fentanyl, motherfucker.
It's our livelihood.
Do you know who invented it? Who made it? Did you already say?
I don't.
Gregory Mitchell?
Yeah. Hey, easy, buddy.
Dave Fentanyl.
Oh, well, Dave.
What's even crazier is so Johnson & Johnson, you know, good old, like, don't cry shampoo.
Yeah,
for babies,
no
Johnson
more tears.
Johnson,
right. Yeah.
They are the largest opium producer in the world. And a lot of the opium
is it in my kid's shampoo? That would explain a lot.
That's why they don't cry when they get soap in their eyes.
They don't cry, but they sure do space the fuck. Yeah, he's
pretty stoned looking, but whatever, he's not crying.
But man, is he really, he's like doing some major finger painting. So
he wrote a symphony.
is that a Van Gogh? Did you fucking finger paint Van Gogh? But yeah, so in Tasmania, off of Australia, they basically went in and paid all these farmers, and they basically said, hey, if you stop growing, you know, wheat and whatever, and start growing opium, and then Johnson & Johnson, they actually figured out a way to, they genetically modified it so that every poppy bulb has, like, I don't know what they're, like, 2 or 3 or 4 times more opioid in it than
amazing.
Than a normal poppy seed or poppy plant.
Nice.
Yeah. So
it's fucking insane. Yeah.
I think it's kind of fucked up that some people can't handle their drugs and they just ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that just sounds like good production. I mean, like, that just sounds like good innovation, you know?
Well, and for years,
Greg just is sitting quiet most of the time.
Johnson & Johnson developed a fucking COVID vaccine, man.
Well, yeah,
and you're
did.
Shitting all over them, John.
Well, I mean, you know, hey, man, they're not. They're all.
It was
good.
All
they're
for
all
profit,
bad.
Though. It was all for fucking profit. Same with AstraZeneca, man.
It's not all for profit.
Well, because the shot's got opium in it. So
there's lots of things that make money that are good.
Yeah,
like Greg's burgers. You've got to. All you've got to do is. No, you got to water down your opium and introduce it to children at a young age. So
in their shampoo.
In their shampoo.
And instead of, you don't give them OxyContin, you give them OxyContin. Yeah. Up until 1961, like, there wasn't a lot of regulation. Yeah, you know, like, there was the FDA did, like, there was 1906, there was, like, in America, there was a Food and Something Act that passed, and that was part of it. So there was regulation, but they weren't really monitored. So then in 1961, there was something called the thalidomide scandal of 1961, prompted an increase in the regulation and testing of drugs before licensing. So basically,
that was about birth defects, wasn't it? It was the morning sickness pill, and all the kids were born with, like, limbs and things that weren't fully formed. Yeah,
there was about 10,000 children who were born with birth defects. About another 5,000 died after birth, and then they don't know
what
how
was
many
the pill
miscarriages
you said, Reese? What was that?
formaldehyde. Was not formaldehyde. What was it? I can't even.
No, I remember. I remember what you're talking about. I forget the name of the drug though.
Thalidomide,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So it was in the late 50s and early 60s. The use of thalidomide in women, some of which were pregnant or got pregnant after, in 46 countries, resulted in the biggest man-made medical disaster ever. And basically what they did was they marketed it for morning sickness.
Yeah. Morning sickness. That's what you said, Reese. Okay.
But they.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. But they knew that it caused problems.
They knew.
Yeah, they knew.
My God, that's horrible.
Well, and the same thing. So with Valium, and I forget. I think it was it Roche. I think Roche came up with Valium, and they knew that Valium was addictive, and they.
Yeah, but it's also delicious.
Tastes like Smarties.
Yeah.
But the reason, but their defense, right, and all these pharmaceutical companies throughout, since the, I guess, the 40s up until, like, even Purdue did this, like the Sacklers, right, the family that owns Purdue, they all say that it's not the drug, it's people who are abusing it. That's like what they say over and over again.
Fucking bullshit.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, go.
God,
well,
man.
That's like
yeah. Something Greg would say.
It is. Like 30 seconds ago.
Wow, what bullshit. Yeah, that's crazy.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. It's fucked up, right? Yeah. So these drugs ushered in, Fortean methods enabled more rational methods of mass production, and increasing understanding of biology and chemistry enabled drug candidates to be chosen systemically rather than discovered serendipitously. The first of novel drugs from the post-war era speaks for itself. The contraceptive pill, introduced in 1960, had an impact on society almost as massive as that of penicillin. And then Valium was brought to the market by Roche in 1963, followed by the introduction of the monoamine oxidase inhibitor, the MAOI class of antidepressants. And antipsychotic. So, and then these drugs ushered in a new era of psychiatric treatment, adding pill-based treatments to the psychoanalytic ones that had previously characterized psychiatry in this era. So,
some of the antidepressants out there are really fucked, though.
Yeah, they are.
Example.
I knew someone who
Prozac.
They were on. Have you guys ever heard of Paxil?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's the fucking devil drug, man. It's horrible. I knew someone who was in a car accident, and they went to the hospital, and they had to be admitted to the hospital for like several days. And after, I think, 3 or 4 days, they were wildly hallucinating. They thought they were on a pirate ship and that people were coming to get them. And the doctors were like, what is going on? What is happening? And they couldn't figure it out. And one of the family members is like, is he taking his Paxil? And they're like, oh, he's on Paxil? Oh, shit. They gave him his Paxil. The hallucination stopped. This is after 4 days without it.
Yeah, but you don't. Maybe he was hallucinating before he got onto Paxil, and that was what was keeping it at bay.
That's true.
Well, and also, he was also on opium. Opium's always the answer, Jesse, always.
Right, of course. Sorry, I forgot.
And also, what happened in the 70s was the government basically had a war on cancer. And also cancer.
Who won
research.
That one?
cancer's still winning. Still winning.
I was going to say, which country did they bomb?
Yeah.
America. They bombed America.
Yeah.
It was also cancer research in the UK showed that survival rates have doubled since the early 70s, due in large part to the massive innovation of oncology medicines that have occurred since then. ACE, or ACE inhibitors, arrived in 1975, improving cardiac health, and even drugs as ubiquitous as I don't know how to say this, and ibuprofen were developed in 1956 and 1969.
I really want to know.
I kind of want to know, too.
It's paracetamol.
Oh, yeah. Paracetamol.
That.
Paracetamol is like it's an off-the-shelf painkiller they sell in the UK.
Oh, all right, cool. I'm going to send you guys my notes.
Yeah, before every episode, John's going to send you his notes, ask you to spell it out phonetically, and then send it back to him.
All right, so let's, for the sake of time, right, we're going to jump into the 2010s.
Yeah.
So the 2010s saw the development.
What a decade.
The last decade full of medical technology is fucking fascinating.
It really honestly. Is. Well, because really of all the biotechnology. Yeah. And
I know, right? Yeah.
Before we jump on, I got a funny Viagra story.
Cool. Yeah.
Excellent.
Are there any non-funny Viagra stories?
No, so there's a little Welsh town called Merthyr Tydfil, and it's like nestled in mountains, and there's a lot of drug testing where a lot of people do voluntary drug testing. They get paid some money, they go to hospital, they get injected, they get observed, they leave. And they were testing angina treatment on people there, and the side effect was all the men got erections, and that's how they discovered Viagra.
Really?
It was a side effect from these angina drugs.
How did that go down? Like, someone was like, do you have an erection too? Because I can't get rid of this
bad
erection.
News. It was so funny if nobody picked up on it. Like, bad news.
No one wanted to say anything.
The angina drugs are a complete failure. We've wasted $1 million.
So there's one dude who was like, hey, anybody else got an erection? And that guy is the hero of Viagra right now.
I have a neat anecdote. Not a story, but an anecdote is a story. So, no, a tidbit of interesting trivia on Viagra, which is for a small percentage of people, if you take Viagra, there's a side effect, a completely harmless side effect that is very neat, where you, for a small percentage of people who take Viagra,
including Jesse, apparently.
I took it in the past. This did not happen to me. You see everything in a shade of blue. Everything. This is true. I'm not making this up. It's like putting on blue tinted sunglasses. Literally everything is a shade of blue. And that happens for a very small percentage of people who take Viagra. And unfortunately, did not happen to me. I really kind of hoped it did, but it didn't.
Is blue your favorite color?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been if that happened.
I mean, did you get an erection or no?
Yeah, that's the side effect you want.
We can talk about that later if you want.
Your angina cleared up.
Blue boners. Blue boners. That's
all. My chest pain went away.
All right, so the 2010s saw the development of innovative new classes of medicines, building on the greater understanding of the body since the genome was first sequenced at the end of the last century. It's weird to think that the last century was like the 90s.
So, right? That's weird.
Yeah.
We're fucking old, guys.
Yeah, fucking old.
God, you guys are.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wait, how old are you?
I was only 16 when the 90s ended. So
who's the youngest person here?
Yeah, I'm oldest one here.
I'm pretty sure Greg's the oldest one here.
I'm 51.
Oh, yeah, you're the oldest one here.
Okay, sorry. Am I the youngest?
How old are you?
I think you're the youngest one, Reese.
I'm 36.
Yeah, you're the youngest.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I don't know how old Jesse is, but...
I'm 42.
42, yeah, me too. That's me.
Yeah.
Woo! Well, I'm not even gonna, I'm the second oldest, so...
But you all look like you're going to live longer than me.
What is that based on?
It's because you haven't gone to the dentist yet.
Yeah. It's just Jesse's background. It makes him look younger. Because he's kind of like a hologram, so like it's...
He kind of is. Yeah.
He just keeps disappearing.
Yeah, he does keep disappearing. It's very bizarre. Yes. I actually thought when he left at one point, and then he wasn't gone.
And then his head just popped.
There was like a
glass. You could just see a glass. What the fuck happened? This knowledge of genetics and the underlying cause of many diseases, including cancer, has resulted in powerful new drugs. In cancer, the pharma industry has begun producing immunotherapies, which do not act directly against the disease, but instead enlist the immune system to fight against malignant tissues.
It's fucking fascinating.
Do what?
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So, I mean, it's like we actually work with, Greg and I, we work together, and we work with a guy, his son, or I guess his daughter-in-law. She works for a biotech company, and, you know, it's like the shit they're doing is just insane. It's like they're using gold to fight cancer. So
really? Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. It's like, that. Yeah.
That'll probably increase the value a little bit. So that's great.
as in, like, people are donating money, or are you?
Yeah, yeah. With enough money, you won't get cancer. It's pretty crazy.
Ask them what they're doing with mercury. What are they doing with mercury? That's the wonder element.
Reese is like, I got a whole bucket of it at home. I just keep pouring it over my head. I'm not going to get cancer, right?
And I definitely won't drink it if it's worth a lot. So.
Yeah, no, it is. But the buckets of semen are absolutely worthless. Yeah. So if you want to drink those, you can. You know, yeah. So.
Drink those all you want. Also fights cancer, I understand.
The amino acids. Yeah, fight cancer.
Jesus Christ. So that's where the porn stars are. They're all fucking cancer patients. Fucking hell, man.
The idea of immunotherapy
it's all coming together.
We just blew Jesse's mind.
had been around since the late 1900s.
I just made a joke that grossed myself out.
Yeah, I saw the look on your face. You were not happy with that one.
I'm not even going to read this. Just a bunch of cancer shit, immunotherapies. Oh, and they're starting to, they're using something. What is this called? They have something now called a chimeric antigen receptor T cell drugs, which is where you take your T cells and they make your T cells fight the cancer, which is pretty fucking awesome.
Amazing. Yeah.
Meanwhile, in infectious diseases, the pharma industry has been able to produce effective drugs that could lead to the eradication of hepatitis C in the next few years. And in 2020, the pharma industry produced dozens of potential vaccines for the COVID-19 pandemic in record time. And that was all because of the genome stuff.
No, that was all because of the Trump administration.
Well, I mean, yes, right.
Operation Warp Speed.
Right. Yes.
Are you, John, are you going to talk about messenger RNA vaccines for a minute?
Do what?
Are you going to talk about the messenger RNA vaccines for a minute?
I'm not, because I don't fucking understand them, but I know that it was based on genome. And
I don't understand them either.
Yeah.
But from what little I've read about them, this is fascinating. So it's a different type of vaccine. So the vaccine that we've all been used to getting is, they give you a piece of the dead virus, a piece of the virus that is dead, so that it can't actually activate and replicate.
Can we call it what it is, a zombie virus? Can we please call it
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Just like the video game.
Yeah.
Yep. And your body and your immune system, your T cells and your B cells, they learn how to fight this virus because the virus isn't fighting back because it's dead. And that's what we've had for decades. And it's very effective. Actually, the World Health Organization considers a vaccine effective if it is effective over 50%, it is considered an effective vaccine. So the messenger RNA vaccines, which have been, it's a type of vaccine tech that has been developed for 30 years, okay? And it was just ready for human trials when COVID-19 came out. Like, it was an insane coincidence. It was insane. And all of the governments of the world are like, so you guys have that tech ready to go, right? You want to try it out? We got something for you to try it out on. And then, so they put it out there, and like, it has a 95% success rate. And even the scientists who developed the messenger RNA vaccine for COVID-19, they're like, holy fuck, we knew this was effective. We had no idea it was going to be this effective.
I can't imagine scientists sitting around saying, holy fuck. I don't know. I feel like they're going to use bigger words.
Oh, gosh, golly, gee. Right? So here's the neat thing. It was so, this new messenger RNA vaccine for COVID-19, which, again, people look at this as like it's a brand new thing, and they're so terrified because people are scared of anything that's new. It's understandable. Right? Of course. I get it. But they've been developing this tech for 30 years, right? And it blew their minds about how effective it was. So now they're like, well, fuck, we've got literally, we are on the precipice of brand new medical technology that has just proven itself far, far beyond anything we expected it to. So now they are developing it for three new things. They're testing it out on three new things, which they're fairly confident they can nip in the bud.
Is one of
the first is versus the malaria. I know you're getting excited about an anti-herpes, but sorry, not yet.
All right.
First is John
calls those what, ball hives, right? That's what.
So the first is malaria. They're going to get rid of. They're fairly certain they can pretty much cure malaria with a vaccine. The second is a universal flu vaccine, as in you don't get a flu vaccine once a year. You get another flu vaccine, and that's it for the rest of your fucking life.
They can keep up with the variants and all that stuff. That's the idea? Wow.
Yeah. And the third one, and this one is, they're like, we don't want to say with confidence, but like, we're pretty sure we can do this. Cancer. Yeah, like personalized cancer, as in like if one of you gets cancer, they tailor your cancer vaccine for your personal cancer and away it goes.
See, that's not marketable though. They should have gone with ED.
I know, right?
Because you can advertise that during sports, you know?
Or male pattern baldness.
Or baldness.
Anyway, that's just what I read. I don't
that's
know a
super,
lot of science
that's,
around it.
That's super interesting.
That's
man.
Fascinating. Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
That's awesome.
Like, we're the... This COVID... Like, COVID-19 was a horrible, horrible fucking a pandemic, but it ushered in a new set of drugs that is going to be life-altering for everybody for the decades to come.
Well, that was one of the things that actually, it was somewhere in all this stuff that I skipped over, but one of the things that was pretty amazing about one of the biggest drivers for pharmaceuticals in the world was the Cold War.
Because
it was all these militaries were like trying to figure out chemical warfare, biological warfare against each other. In doing that, they were also at the same time discovering things about cells and viruses and microorganisms, and so they were learning a lot because they were pumping so much money into the Department of Defense to like figure out how to do these things. So it was like kind of a side, they weren't trying to do that, but it was like kind of a benefit of it.
Amazing. So,
yeah.
There's a great book called The Fruits of War. And it basically goes through history looking at moments where there were wars and everyone came together for a common purpose and money and resources were poured into science and, developing things. And, the advancement of medicine and everything else, technology, it just happened because of it. So I guess the Cold War, it makes total sense. It's like everyone was like had endless amounts of money to pour into this kind of research to kill each other. But on the way there, they found some cool stuff that could also help people too.
Yay, Cold War.
Yeah. I mean, when you make an omelet, you're going to kill, 7-8 million people. I think that's how the saying goes.
I'm pretty sure that's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I don't make omelets anymore. just go scrambled eggs. It's fine. Scrambled eggs are fine.
There goes India. Yeah. The guilt. I mean, that fucking Denver almond is delicious, but the guilt.
Yeah. just throw some fucking ham and onions and some scrambled eggs, okay?
But don't call it an omelet. Don't call it an omelet. Okay, but there are some challenges in this new frontier. The new generation of drugs are expensive and have pushed the limits of healthcare systems, finances, as well as the boundaries of science. With the hepatitis C drugs, Gilead, which I guess is the manufacturer of this, faced huge amounts of controversy over the initial cost of its therapies, although these were reduced drastically over time as more competitors came to market. And firms such as Vertex have added to the controversy with tough pricing demands for new therapies for cystic fibrosis, leading to standoffs lasting several years with payers in countries such as the UK. So that's kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
And here's some. So in 2019, the United States remained the world's largest single pharmaceutical market, generating more than $490 billion of revenue, despite being only a 2.2% increase from the previous fiscal year, the United States market accounted for 48% of the global pharmaceutical market. So we fucking take a lot of drugs in this country. Top pharmaceutical companies located in Canada in 2020 by revenue, total pharmaceutical sales in Canada came to about $30 billion in 2019. Of this, U.S.-based diversified health company Johnson & Johnson generated nearly $4.2 billion. Johnson & Johnson has the largest market share in Canada at 13%.
It's because in America, you got drugs for everything
We sure do.
And it seems like Johnson & Johnson is kind of your whipping company tonight, John.
Is that, hey man, I'm just fucking giving you an agenda, man.
Buddy?
I think at some point in his childhood, like he had the no tears shampoo and it hurt.
And it burned.
And so now he's got a personal vendetta.
Yeah.
Okay. You're not supposed to rub it in directly though.
Yeah. It's you're true. Not just supposed to pour it in your eye.
So in 2018, the global pharmaceutical market was worth $952.51 billion.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
So that is almost a fucking $1 trillion. Right?
How far away is that from $1 trillion, John?
It's 952.51 minus 1.
No, I think it's 1 minus 9.
Yeah,
point.
There you go. Yeah.
What, we're not a math show. We've talked about this a million times.
No. You mean we're not a maths show.
It's pluralized math show.
And Purdue Pharma is owned by one of America's richest families. The collective net worth is $13 billion. So,
Jesus Christ. It's not that big.
Well, so what's crazy...
This podcast makes more than that.
Wait, what?
Who does?
Motherfucker, you have been holding out on us.
Yeah, this is actually a fake background. I live in a mansion.
So West Virginia ended up suing Purdue in 2007. And at that point, they had made $9.3 billion on OxyContin. And they settled for $600 million.
Jesus Christ.
And basically, and there was no criminal action because there was going to be a criminal, like the U.S. government was going to prosecute, and then it went all the way to whoever the attorney general at the top at that time was. They didn't pursue the case.
It's because they got so much money, though, haven't they? They can just
take
people to play golf and all that kind of stuff they do. Like, is that how it works? They take them to play golf and then
pretty much you take people to go golfing and then all is forgiven. Exactly. And
it's golf and Viagra, buckets of semen. That's how economies work. So here's something that's kind of fascinating, and I didn't, it's just something I skipped over, but we're about to close it out, and I just wanted to kind of finish up with this. So penicillin was discovered in 1928, and we are now down to 6 antibiotics that still work, and no companies are producing antibiotics because there's no money in it.
What?
Yeah. Well, there's no money. So basically, if you go produce a dick pill, you can charge $30 for a dick pill and people will pay that. But the market, so it takes, so for a drug to end up on market, they start out with 5,000 to 10,000 chemical compounds. They get it down to 250 chemical compounds. Then they start doing animal testing, and then they get it down to 5 chemical compounds, and then they'll move to human trials. And then, so basically, it takes about $1 billion and about 10 years to get a drug from start to finish. So it's a lot of money. So if it's not profitable for them, they won't do it. So what happened, like what was like in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, governments around the world would partner with these pharmaceutical companies and develop things like antibiotics. So, and I cannot remember her name, but there was I was reading an article from this woman, and she was saying that we are basically about 100 years from the time penicillin happened, we will no longer have antibiotics that work. So we're going to, like, so if we don't develop new antibiotics, we're about 6 to 8 years away from having working antibiotics. So that means
because we're becoming immune.
Well, because the viruses are becoming immune, because the microbes are becoming immune.
Good job, they're really slow.
Yeah, well, so it's like, so basically you have to think that human beings, a new human, like,
this is the part of every episode where John just shits all over our future.
Yeah, because
John's the only one who does that, Greg.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But so in the time it takes a human being to turn, so in 25 years, right? So that's the average age at which we reproduce. So it's like, so every 25 years we're creating a new generation. Viruses in that time will have 40,000 generations. So they have a lot more time to figure shit out and adapt, right? So basically that's what's happening. So if we don't have new antibiotics by the year 2028, you will no longer be able to have knee surgeries, or because your infections, your risk of dying will be too high. She says that basically you'll have 10 million people a year that will die that aren't dying now if we don't have antibiotics. So, I mean,
that's, yes, you're correct, but then there's bacteriophages, which, like, so phages were a form of antibiotics before the type of antibiotics that we're familiar with became so intensely popular. But, like, phages were so incredibly difficult to manufacture, but that was way back when. And technology has shrunk. It's gotten faster. It's gotten easier. So we actually have an alternative to antibiotics, which are phages, which, like, yeah, the only shitty thing about phages is they have to be tailored to each person individually. It can't be a blanket pill. Like, you go to your family doctor, like, here, just take this pill, get out of my fucking office. You know, it's like, oh, you've got the specific bacterial infection. Give me your blood. We'll send it to the lab. We'll create a bacterial phage for you. And that's tailored just for your thing. So yeah, it's, we have it. It's just expensive. Right?
All right.
Which is,
well, that's, there's a little ray of sunshine.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
John, you're fired.
All right.
Jesse, how come when we talk about politics and hockey, you know nothing? Then we talk about drugs.
Boring, Reese.
You're almost a doctor. Yeah.
Jesse's the smartest person I've ever met in my life. I cannot believe it's the same guy. That was like,
just the wrong topic.
It's just wrong. We were out of his wheelhouse.
We're gonna, you know what? Our podcast will be sciencey shit. That's gonna be our podcast. That's what's gonna be called. Sciencey shit. But stuff we read. All right, you guys ready for last shot?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, all technically, right. It's called last call, but whatever.
Last shot.
Shit. No, I need whatever, booze in my glass. Hold on.
Hey, can you pass some DiSorno this way? Can you Skype me some DiSorno?
DiSorno? Is that what you said?
What do you call it? DiSorno? Oh, yeah. I've had it before. I think I was able to make like a flaming drink with it. DiSorno?
Hey, yeah. Oh, he's doing JMO.
Jameson.
Oh, good Lord.
Before I take us out here, I just wanted to... Guys, thank you so much for coming on.
No, like, thanks for having us. It's been, yeah, it's been really awesome.
Oh, this has been really fun, man.
It's been a lot of fun.
And for the record, I've just had a lot of Jameson in my life, so it's, it's tough. But yes, thank you guys so much for being on here, man. This was so much fun.
Thank you. I normally don't drink on podcasts when I'm doing podcasts, so I hope I haven't like monopolized the conversation.
Not even a little bit, no. And you're welcome anytime, fantastic. Because we drink a lot on this podcast. Well, John doesn't. He's kind of a lightweight.
I am. Well, you know, I have a fragile constitution. So.
Fragile constitution, yes.
Yeah. I plugged a local brewery on our podcast just because they were going out of business. And they were like, hey, buy our beer. We're going out of business because of COVID,
yeah.
And they sent me loads of free beer. It was great.
Well, that's well played,
which is like a strange tactic for a company that needs its product. Yeah,
it's going out of business.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they went out of business. Their model was all fucked up. They're just giving their beer away for free.
They were trying to start a beer economy, and they just didn't work. Didn't pick up. All right. COVID-19 was a stark reminder that nature wants us dead. Nature specifically wants all of us here at HDI dead. It tried taking Kevin out on the slopes, tried killing Greg and I with COVID. But eat a dick, nature, because we have drugs. For the first time in 100 years, we lived in a world that our great-grandparents would find familiar. Thankfully, through advancements in science and biotechnology, what would have been years of wearing masks and muting our lives while we wait on a vaccine ended up being less than 2 years. Mm-hmm. Modern medicine has allowed us to live longer than any of our ancestors. It has allowed us to take our kids to the park without worrying about them getting polio, smallpox, or dying from a bacterial infection from that scratch they got going down the slide. Pharmaceuticals have allowed us to thrive in every aspect of our lives. While there are certainly unexpected side effects or the risk of addiction with some drugs, overall, pharmaceuticals have made the world better for most of humankind. Medicine is a business, so we certainly need to encourage our elected officials to regulate pharmaceutical companies. If we let them run wild and only think about the profits, we end up with an opioid crisis. We must continue to walk that fine line of keeping companies motivated to create new antibiotics while maintaining their profits. This won't be easy, but we can do it if we stay diligent. History is not defeating itself. It is thriving in this pharmaceutical supported world we live in.
Fuck have yeah, John.
Week. Yeah, I like that.
And we play the anthem. Play the anthem.
Make history. Thanks so much, guys.
Cheers.
Really
thank you.
Cheers.